Hello there, and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host, Neil Shilath, and I'm delighted to say I have been joined by Varun Vasudevan once again. How are you, Varun?
I'm good. Glad to be back after a small break. But you guys handled the Fiorentina episode really well. It was a fun listen. But yes, glad to be back with both of you guys and talk shop today.
Glad to have you. And we're also joined by Alex Barker. How are you, Alex?
I'm good. And do you know what, Neil? I'm feeling prepared for this one.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah. Neil, before we started, said Alex is not prepared for this. Made a joke about that. But I'll have you know, the two players we're going to talk about in this episode today, I am at least, I've been watching extensively all season. So take that middle finger to you.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we'll find out in a few minutes. But yeah, as Alex alluded to there, today we're not going to be talking about any teams. Instead, we're going to focus on a few players ahead of the summer transfer window. We've picked out six exciting under-23 players, so two each, who we think could be ones to watch in the summer transfer window, as obviously many teams will vie for their services. We've got a nice positional spread between some attackers, couple midfielders, and a couple of defenders. And also, we're going across a fair few leagues from Portugal, couple of Liga players, La Liga, Eredivisie, and Bundesliga. So we've got a nice mix, I think. And I'd say without further ado, we should begin. So let's start with the big one, perhaps the player who I think everyone expects to move this summer, and quite possibly the one who, if he does move, will command the biggest transfer fee. So Varun, why don't you tell us about João Neves?
Yeah, thanks for that intro. And I should let you know, I have researched extensively the two players I'm going to talk about. So all the pressure is on you, Neil. Me and Alex seem pretty prepared.
Okay.
Jokes apart, I mean, as you rightly said, João Neves is like the name on everyone's lips. And just a brief short history, he's a youth product of Benfica. So he's been there most of his life. And he started getting chances in the senior team at the young age of 18. I think last year, post the departure of Enzo Fernandez in the middle of the season, is when he really started getting a lot of chances. He almost replaced Enzo Fernandez's role in the team. And he really impressed in the second half of the season. And this season, he's got a lot more game time as a regular starter. And I think in the start of the season, it was a lot of him playing deeper. And even in the league, I think he plays deeper in a pivot. But in the Champions League, and especially in recent matches, him and Florentino Luis have been playing. And Florentino Luis is a good defensive midfielder, so João Neves has a bit more freedom. So I'll talk about that, the position aspect. But I just wanted to get it out there that he plays in a pivot. That's how Benfica's system is. I think I'll first go with him in possession because he's brilliant in possession. Like if you just watch a Benfica game, the vibes are just up there. And the main reason is ball control and dribbling are very, very noticeably great. He is super press resistant. He keeps wriggling his ways out of all kinds of situations. And he's a pretty good playmaker as well. Has nice range, nice playmaking brain. He can continuously progress the game, nice forward passes. He can also retain the ball when required, although I won't say he's great there. His retention is okay. He often is a forward-minded kind of player. He wants to dribble and then play the forward pass. So he's not like a metronomous kind of, you know, player, like a very Toni Kroos kind of player, as of now anyway. I mean, he's way too young. He can become anything. But as of now, he doesn't have that very calm, composed posa. Lot of retention. He doesn't have that aura about him. I think he's very good when it comes to breaking, especially the first line of pressure. That first line of pressure when Benfica really wants to just give him the ball and beat the high press and then, you know, release. I think he's probably amongst Europe's best midfielders at that specific action, at just receiving, breaking the line and putting a forward pass. He does pick the odd wrong pass. He does hold on to the ball a little longer than expected, keeps dribbling. So many moves just ends up in someone fouling him. And after a point, you don't know whether that's really, you know, beneficial, because the game just stops. No one gets a yellow card. It's not like he's getting a free kick in a dangerous area. So lots of those kind of moves happen. Maybe a better choice would be just to quickly pass it and move. So those are some in possession gaps I see. He does have the odd mistake when he tries to go for a switch. Like, you just feel he's in a bit of a hurry and he screws it up. I think a lot of this is related to age, maturity. Just a bit more composure, a bit more calm, a bit more decision making that will come as he ages. So I think in possession, then that's the only gap. Out of possession is where I think if anyone sees Neves for a while, you'll realize he's even better out of possession. Like, I personally came way more impressed with him out of possession, because if you follow highlight reels, you'll just think, oh, he's a nice dribbly boy playmaker, you know. But out of possession, he has a lot of intensity. He's a world-class dueler, according to me. His pace, his energy, the way he uses his body ensures he dominates ground duels. And he actually is very good aerially. I mean, people immediately assume he's like short. He's like 5'8 or something. And he'll just be bad aerially. But he's aerially strong. He is in the 86th percentile for aerial win percentage, while being 90th percentile for aerial duels. So in the Portuguese league, so he attempts a lot of duels and he comes out on top a lot as well. And the main reason is his jump and his agility is superb. It feels like he has springs in his boots. I've seen him beat much taller players on corners while defending corners because of his jump. So I really like his defending. He's very intense. And in the games he does play deeper, he can also do the shielding the defense calmly, just standing in front of the center backs, intercepting cutbacks, defending transitions. He is pretty good at that as well. So he almost feels like a Kante, N'Golo Kante peak in defending. That's how good his ground coverage and intensity is. So I'll probably stop here on the traits. I think you guys have got a good idea of his profile. Where should he go? The main thing now is the price tag. Benfica have that trademark 120 million euros release clause on him, like they do for most of their good players. But then it's negotiable. Gonzalo Ramos went for 70-75 million to PSG last year, even though he had the 120 million release clause. Joao Felix, they stuck to the whole thing. Atletico Madrid had to pay it. So it varies. I don't think John Neves or Antonio Silva, if they stick to 120 million euros, I don't know if a team will pay that, so they might have to reduce it, but it'll still probably be a good 80-90 million euros. The first thought I had was Manchester City. I mean, they need a look, they have the money.
It's better than saying Manchester United, at least, so continue.
Yeah, I mean, I would like United to sign him, but I don't think we should be spending 100 million on a player at this stage. And I'm also not sure if he is really good in the air, but just adding another short guy. So I'm not super sure on that. I think it can work if you buy two midfielders, but then there's way too much spend. The simpler solve is Manchester City just getting him, and the current Kovacic role, the past Gundogan role, or, you know, a role just beside Rodri, you know, would make a lot of sense. He has some of the things Rodri doesn't have when it comes to that carrying power, that ability to push forward. I do think he's better deeper. If a lot of people see him, they'll say, oh, he's a proper number 8. Or, you know, you should play him ahead of a defensive midfielder and give him freedom. I'm not sure about that, because I don't think he's really good in advanced phases. He's not a good mover. He's not a good off-the-ball runner. He's not great at final third creation or a final ball. And he's very good at breaking the first line of press. His dribbling isn't like a Pogba or a Bellingham to open avenues in attack. It's more of the, you know, I beat my man. It's more the Frankie de Jong types, you know, where it's like much useful deeper. So I do think he's pretty good in a pivot or in a deep role. And he's defensively also solid. So, yeah, City beside Rodri is like the dream. They have been buying old players repeatedly in midfield. I don't know why. Calvin Phillips, Kovacic. It feels like they're just getting around some cheap buys until they wait for the elite long-term solve. And I think this could be that. So I'll stop there. Neil, you had a question.
Yeah, no, just quickly. Do you all, because yesterday, we're recording on Sunday, so yesterday City played Luton, obviously thrashed them, but they rested Rodri, and one thing that stuck out to me there was they don't actually have, like, not even a Rodri replacement, but like a, you know, a proper defensive midfielder anymore. So I think, you know, like you say, obviously in like your first choice starting lineup, you have Neves alongside Rodri, but for these games where you want to rotate, I think it's also useful to have someone like him to play. I mean, obviously against Luton Town it didn't matter so much, but like if Rodri's injured or suspended for a big game or something, then it really helps to have someone like Neves to play that, you know.
Yeah, and I also think like Rodri this year especially, he's been doing really well in the advanced progression stuff. Like he's actually been creating, he's actually been moving, getting into good positions to shoot. I mean, so like they can have that kind of pivot where even when Rodri moves ahead, you know, aid the final third phase, Neves can like sit back. So I think in that sense also it works. As you said, you get a comfortable deeper player who can, when Rodri moves ahead, play deep. When Rodri doesn't play, play deep alone. And then when Rodri is deep, he can push ahead as well. So you have all three scenarios covered.
Yeah, it looks good for them. Well, let's see how that goes. But now let's move on to another very exciting player. In fact, one who's been, I guess, certainly talked as one of the most exciting prospects for a number of years now, but never really kicked on. So Alex, do you think this is finally the window where Ryan Cherki gets a big move and really impresses somewhere?
Yes, I think so. It's definitely worth, as you say, doing a quick timeline of Ryan Cherki, because if we were talking about him last season, we probably would have said he'd get a big move in the summer of 2023. Last season, the 22-23 season for Lyon, he put up his best season by a mile for like just total return, but also underlying numbers. He put up 20 90s, the most he's put up in his career. He got 10 goals and assists. He was averaging just under 0.5 goals and assists per 90, which is actually an underperformance of his expected numbers. So that was when he was 19, turning 20 years old. And he ranked as one of Ligue 1's top players for number of expected goals and expected assisted goals per 90. So great stuff in 22-23. And I think I even made a video at the time saying Ryan Cherki, like, he's now beginning to explode. And one of the things, I was just re-watching it before we, for coming on here, because I do research, is one of the things I praised was that Laurent Blanc was had criticised him in the media and was like, you're doing good, but you could do more. And I think at the time that felt like a good thing. Because, you know, he's been around for ages, as you said. But what I feel like I lost sight of is how young he is. And that got out of hand. It wasn't the last time Laurent Blanc criticised him. And he subsequently became a bit of a spokesperson for Lyon. Just as, obviously, they went into the start of the latest season where they were almost relegated. Well, almost relegated. You know, they were on relegation form, right? Bottom of the league for a really long time. Before Pierre Sage came in and rescued them. And during that time, like, Cherki was playing regularly for the start of the season. And he'd become a target, not even just in like French media, but even English media. Like in the UK, the commentators were just constantly targeting him. And it was very painful to watch, calling him lazy and stuff. And I was one of the people online saying, you know, give him a bit of space. But as the early season went on, he quite clearly was like losing the will to play football. There's a particular game against Rams where Rams won 2-0 and Cherki played 55 minutes, which I think was like the last time for about six, seven games he played that many minutes, right? And he barely looked like he was trying. He looked like he didn't want to be on the football pitch. But you've got to remember, this was about three games after, I think it was the PSG game where Lyon fans, you know, abuse their players in the stadium. It looked like his career had stagnated. But I've been revisiting Lyon recently because they've had a big resurgence in the Coupe de France final. And Cherki has been made a bit more of a bit part player. He's been taken out of the spotlight, I think it's fair to say. But recently he is beginning to creep back into the starting 11 on a more regular basis. And the signs, I think, are really good. But one of the criticisms you could have had of him in the past was, and this is a fear when Chelsea were obviously wanting him in the past, was, yeah, he's really technical. Like, he looks great in the 1v1, like against a block maybe, but he just lacks that explosiveness, and he kind of lacks the final ball. He seems to make decisions a bit slowly. You could see all the quality was there, but he wasn't always applying it. I think now, from what I've seen in some recent games, against Rams, funnily enough, seeing him come over to Toulouse and get a goal and an assist, he looks to be doing a lot better now in like fast break scenarios. He seems a lot more comfortable kind of being the guy to receive the ball in Lyon's team, turn and really quickly make a final pass. There's just so many things to love about his game. Like in my notebook where I've been collecting Lyon notes, just everything about him is a positive note, which I've not really had in like any other player. It's just like, you know, like whenever there's Lyon gets a block, he's the guy to make the dangerous pass. You know, he's so balanced and agile. He's got really good upper body strength now, bouncing players off him. He's got really good positioning, gaining separation. I could go on all day. But, you know, in the interest of time, he's turning 21 in August. So I think he's officially finally leaving young prospect territory. And he's also entering the final year of his contract. And he's been a bit coy on his future when spoken about it. So I think, in my opinion, I welcome answers from the board here. I don't think there's so much harm staying in Lyon. If BSR stays there, they actually seem to be in a bit of a stable spot. And recently, Cherki just looks like he's improving game on game, which is great to see. My weird shout is, I think the Bundesliga could be a good league for him in terms of, while he looks a lot better now in the fast break scenarios, I want him to really improve that part of his game and play at the highest tempo. And I think the Bundesliga is the league you go to for that. Maybe not as much as it has been in the past, but you get where I'm coming from. So how does it sound if Xavi Simons is to go back to PSG to be his replacement at RB Leipzig?
That's a really interesting shot because, you know, obviously Cherki is a really exciting talent and that doesn't need a lot of talking about. But what I was really thinking when you mentioned Cherki is like just where will he go? Because I couldn't really see a place for him. But Leipzig is a super interesting shot. I think that's a very good possibility. What do you have to say, Varun?
I'll tell you my doubt on Cherki, and I'm not saying this is what will happen, but that's my only thing. You often come across these players, right? These narrow wingers or number 10s or, you know, free roaming kind of players who look better in a slightly smaller team where they have a lot of freedom. They don't have that pressure to defend or press, and they see a lot of the ball. And their teammates don't mind the risk-taking appetite because they're probably one of the most creative people. And the shift to a bigger team changes all of that. They see a little lesser of the ball. They have to be in a cohesive defensive system. They can't do all the risk-taking things that they need. There are other playmakers too. And they often don't fit. Like, I thought that was true about someone like Depay. At United, Joao Felix is another one I do feel a bit like that for. Coutinho maybe is another one. He was a lot more better free-flowing. He just didn't fit into systems, didn't defend that much. So I don't know if Cherki is in that bracket of those, you know, free-roaming number 10s who look really good in a team like Lyon. But the moment you start going to a bigger team where there are 3-4 other players and you're not seeing as much of the ball, then all those, the things about his defending or work rate or, you know, what he adds in terms of goal scoring, those probably start to magnify a bit. So that's my only concern with him. Like, and I think Leipzig, while not being like a super, like it's not like a city, but I think a little bit of that could be seen at a club like Leipzig itself. That's my only question. What do you think?
Just to end on him then, I would say, I think that's a valid concern. The answer to that would be, I think he's already gone through this character arc. I think he became the player in Lyon after a decent end to last season. We're a bigger team at the beginning of this season, I guess, in terms of expectation. And, you know, Cherki, like, in a team that was going to be performing when Cherki didn't, like, that difference in expectation, I guess, what you're talking about, and, like, I guess the weight of responsibility, that fell hard on him, and I think he suffered for that. I think he has come through that. And this Lyon side now, they're a lot more pragmatic and defensive, and Cherki is playing a better role defensively. But the last game I watched was part of a, you know, it wasn't necessarily like a strong press, but it was a high block against Rams at times, like 5-2-3, and Cherki was good at holding his defensive position, keeping players in his cover shadow. So just an element. I think it's a valid concern, but I'd like to think he's already come through that character arc, and going to a big team isn't going to sway him as much as it would have done last season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. As you said, just a year left on his contract, so we can certainly expect something to happen in the near future. So that's certainly one to watch. Now, we've spoken about two sort of academy graduates so far, and we'll keep that trend going with Nico Williams, who I think is another very exciting young winger to watch out for this summer. Obviously, I think most people know his backstory. He was, of course, born in Pamplona. Of course, he's the brother of Iñaki, who's well, at this point a legend at Athletic Club. And he started playing for a couple of sort of youth teams in Pamplona, and then moved to the Athletic Club Youth Academy at about 10, 11 years old. And then he's been there ever since. He obviously came through the sort of academy teams and B teams, and then he got his first team debut a couple of years ago. But he's only really become a complete regular starter this season. He started to regularly feature last year. And yeah, I think this season he's certainly had his sort of breakout campaign. And I think he's got, 11 goal involvements. Last season he had 10 as well. So he's very much a regular player, a regular starter for them now, the last couple of seasons actually. And I think he's, 21 years old, obviously Spanish international as well now. He's played a couple of international games for them. So yeah, with all that considered, I think he's very much ready now for the next step. So a bit about him as a player, he's obviously plays on the wing. He can play on either side, but certainly Ernesto Valverde has preferred to use him on the left. And he's very much your sort of dribbly wide winger who loves to receive the ball and get at defenders. Excellent 1v1. He's got the skills. He's got the close control. So basically all-round dribbling ability to get past people on either side with feints and sort of tricks and flicks and everything. But interestingly, what stands out to me about him in terms of uniqueness of his profile is the fact that he's, regardless of whether he's playing on the left or right wing, he is a better creator than scorer. And we can see that in his stats too. So across both his sort of full seasons where he was a regular starter in La Liga, so last season and this, he has had a greater expected assisted goals figure than his expected goals. So, and by sort of a decent amount too. So regardless of where he's playing, he's creating more. And obviously off the right, he's right-footed, by I should say, by the way. So obviously off the right, it makes sense that, you know, he sort of cuts onto his right foot and can cross. But off the left, as opposed to most sort of opposite-footed wingers who play on a certain wing, who like to cut inside and shoot, with Williams, what you see is he sort of chops to create the separation. But the angle he chops at is maybe a bit more, let's say, sharp. So instead of like driving towards goal, he chops a bit away from goal even. And so what that does is that rather than opening a shooting, I mean, he's still far from goal, so rather than opening a shooting chance, that opens more of a crossing possibility for him. And his deliveries are really good too, because I think that maybe goes a bit underrated in his dribbling ability, that his deliveries are quite good, sort of on point as well. And of course, he can get into the box and create with cutbacks again, creating the separation through his dribbling and putting something across. And I think the best part about him is the fact that so he can do all this, which is all sort of very useful skills to have against low blocks especially. But at the same time, he's a very clever runner off the ball. He's got good speed as well. He can threaten in behind And again, obviously, it helps to be a good dribbler. So he's someone who can threaten in transition on counterattacks and also help break down low blocks, which is a really, really important sort of both of them are really important aspects for a winger, especially one who's making a step up to a top club, because obviously Athletic Club do face a few low blocks themselves, but if he moves on to a bigger team, he will definitely face even more low blocks. And like sort of Varun was alluding to, you might see sometimes with these wingers who shine for, let's say, relatively smaller teams, may look a bit out of place when they have to break down more blocks. But I don't think that'll be the case with Williams. He can threaten both ways, as I mentioned. So that's certainly maybe one of the best sort of aspects of his profile. And obviously now the big question is, and also I should say defensively, to be honest, I haven't watched his defensive side that closely. But what I would say is he certainly does a very good job of doing his job, basically tracking back, taking care of all his responsibilities. And Athletic Club have a really interesting pressing structure where there is a lot of onus on the wingers to trigger the presses. And he's been very good at that as well. So I think he's very intelligent and he does his work defensively as well. So I don't think there's any sort of concerns in that respect at all. So with all that said, like I said, I think he's very much ready for the next step now. And he's been linked to a lot of Premier League clubs. He's been linked to Chelsea, which is a blanket no. He's been linked to Manchester United, which is also no. I think he should go to Spurs because I think he is an almost perfect fit for Ange Postecoglou's system, which needs these high wide wingers who can also come inside and sort of attack in transition or stay wide and, you know, sort of dribble against low blocks. And Williams is absolutely perfect, like I've said, for all of that. I think he's the perfect profile fit for Ange Postecoglou's system at Spurs. And obviously they do need wingers. He can play on both wings, which is really helpful for the rest of the players they have. So I think it's an absolute no-brainer for Spurs to go for him, maybe even make him the marquee signing of the window. And I think it's a perfect fit from all angles, like wherever you look at it. So yeah, obviously Athletic Club is an amazing place. So if you stay there, that's very cool. But like if you think of in terms of moving to a bigger club, so to speak, then I think Spurs is the place to go for him.
Yeah, I think we can keep this one quick, to be honest, because I think that's the most... most sensible transfer there is. I mean, everyone's been talking about how Nico Williams needs goes to Tottenham and how he's the perfect fit. I haven't really got much to add.
Yeah, I mean, same here. I think Nico to Spurs is just perfect. And I would also add on the defending part that you were talking about, I think he's a very good defender. Very good presser, very good work ethic, and he's positionally aware. As you said, he knows when to track back or when to proactively just, you know, defend from the front, when to recover. So I think his defending aspects are also very good. So yeah, no-brainer.
They should absolutely go for it. All right, well, let's move on to another player now who's also been talked about a fair bit. And I think it should be quite interesting to discuss. So Varun, why don't you talk about Mats Pfeiffer?
Yeah, I'll do this one in a bit of a different way. I'll just go with his pros and cons for, and, you know, describe his profile that way. Just a quick look on his career. I think he's been in the Dutch system for a while, FC Twente. And then there were two impressive years with Excelsior. And that was convincing enough for Feyenoord to pick him. And he quickly became a starter in the 22-23 season, playing beside Orkun Kokcu in midfield. And post-departure of Kokcu, Pfeiffer has been given more progression duties this season and he's only looked better. So before that, he was a little more limited and was more like a ball winner, pivot partner to Kokcu, who took care of all the playmaking and progression. But now Pfeiffer is doing a lot more and he's really coming into that complete midfielder kind of role. On his pros, I really like his progressive passing consistency and range. Constantly, he's the guy who plays that forward ball, who gets them out of their half. And he has a very nice range to it. Outside foot passes to a winger, switches, lobs, those grounded passes to the feet of a striker who can receive back to goal. through balls to let an attacker free. Like, he has a nice range, both feet. He's very two-footed, left foot, right foot, outside foot. So constantly you just see him receiving on the edge of his box or slightly ahead of it in their defensive third, and he just releases a player and Feyenoord are in and they're all running. So he's really good at that. His ground coverage and intensity in defense is superb. Very intense defender. He runs all the time. He's running for 90 minutes. And you can feel that irritation in an attacking dribbler when they have to dribble and Weaver's just running and he's recovered and he's already there. He has these long strides, covers ground very quickly. And then he's very irritating. He uses his hands, his upper body a lot. He slides in. He keeps pushing people. So he's just a menace when it comes to defense. His in possession movement IQ is very good, and in general, I really like his IQ both in and out of possession. He knows where to be. He takes up very, very smart positions, whether it's wide on the wings or to open a passing lane for someone else, or just to drop between the center backs, or you know, on the side of a center back. And even defensively, he's very positionally aware. So overall, I think his intelligence, his decision-making, his awareness of where to be, all these are good. He also has very good vertical carrying using his long strides. He can have those burst runs through the middle with the ball where he just taps the ball and immediately beats one or two players. So if you give him a bit of space, he does that too. And he's a tall guy, very good in aerial duels, very good in ground duels, as I said. Coming to the cons or the limits, I don't think he's a great back-to-goal player. When he's receiving from a center back or the goalkeeper, he can't really get that close control, that agility in terms of, you know, shifting his body and carrying it. He doesn't have that like a Frenkie de Jong. He manages it well. He has a very nice first time pass and he usually flicks it to the full back or back to the center back. Usually a nice progressive pass. So he manages well, but yeah, under pressure, that's his go-to move. He won't really carry out of pressure or, you know, playmake. I also think his defending is a little aggressive. So I'm not sure if this is an Eredivisie thing or a 500 thing. But then he's way too front foot. He really likes to, you know, like run and just tackle the ball early. He also relies a lot on his upper body strength, which sometimes make his tackles a little clumsy, where he's using his hands a lot and he gives a foul or he slides in and it's a little rough. So comes off in the Eredivisie most of the time. My one fear is if he starts going into a good league and they are much better dribblers who are just that, they just have that 10% extra, you know, pace or agility to get away from him. Will these sliding tackles become late catches and fouls? Will these upper body pushing become desperate, you know, shirt clinging or that kind of stuff that gives away fouls in dangerous areas? So it's a thin line, and I don't know if when you scale up the league difficulty whether these start becoming issues. And yeah, those I'll probably stop here. And where he should go, I think he should be paired with a playmaker who's really good back to goal and who takes care of deep progression duties and lets Weaver take care of the second progression or even third progression duties of getting into the opponent half. And in defense, this guy can take Weaver's help in defending intensity. So the two teams and two players I can come up with are Barcelona as a partner to Frenkie de Jong and Manchester United as a partner to Kobbie Mainoo. So both Mainoo and Frenkie de Jong can cover for Weaver's gaps and they can be helped a lot by his defensive intensity and his final third power push in terms of progression. I'll stop here. What do you guys think?
I think hopefully it doesn't go to Manchester United.
Just to add one last thing, he is apparently rumored for 40 million euros. I mean, even assuming it's a big club or it's United or anything, max that goes to 50, 55, that is a steal for his profile. I think that is a steal. Anyone who's getting Weaver for that kind of money is getting a bit of a bargain.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think actually, I really like the Barcelona shout though, because they do need, I mean, obviously United really need midfielders, but I think they need Weaver and his exact profile even more than United do. Because I mean, we see right now they're playing like Andreas Christensen in midfield quite often. And then they're having to drop Ilkay Gundogan or someone into the double pivot to limit and that obviously limits his sort of attacking qualities. But if you get Weaver in there, then that really sort of, I think that makes Barcelona's midfielder look a lot better instantly almost with just that one addition. So yeah, I actually like that shot a lot.
I agree as well, especially since he at least has an idea of what he would be at Barcelona, at Man United. I mean, Ten Hag could go and go a completely different place. You say you need a midfielder. Why? Well, you don't know what you're going to do next season. As far as I know, you could play 3-5-2.
Like,
I mean, as bad as it sounds, I agree with both of you. I think the Barcelona one is the simpler fit. I mean, Mino is a teenager too. We probably need two midfielders. And then, as you guys said, under whom, in what tactics? I think Barcelona, Frankie de Jong's partner is like the best solution for FIFA.
Yeah, and obviously that, I mean, even Barcelona isn't like 100% clear with, you know, Xavi leaving and stuff, potentially. But yeah, I mean, it still is way more clear than that thing. So yeah, I think that's all for FIFA. Let's go on now to another very exciting young player, but one I think who should not move. This summer. Let me explain why. Obviously, first, that player is Jeremy Frimpong. Quick questions for you guys. So, in his first three full senior seasons, two at Celtic and one at Bayer, well, I mean, one and a half at Celtic and one and a half at Bayer Leverkusen, how many goal involvements in the top flight leagues do you think Jeremy Frimpong got?
That was a very across the last two question. Seasons, did you say?
No, in his first three seasons. So from 2019 to 2022, his first three senior seasons, how many goal involvements did he get in the leagues?
Combined, I reckon it's not that high, like 9.
Varun?
Five.
Stop googling these pro for Brooklyn.
I'm not. 5.
Alex, let it go, man.
Say it in, it's for bro.
Where do you want to guess, or where is
it? He's got on mute because we were bullying him. I think
I said five.
Yeah, no, both of you are wrong. It's actually 13.
Okay.
He got 6 in the Scottish Premiership and 7 in half of the season in the Bundesliga. So he was already doing well in the Bundesliga. Now, do you want to guess how many he got in the last two seasons? And by the way, we're recording this before Bayer Leverkusen's game against Werder Bremen, where he could get more.
And could win the league.
Indeed.
I'm going to guess 22.
Varun?
20.
Well, you're both a little less generous than you should be. He's got 15 in each, so 30 altogether.
Wow.
So he had 13 in first three. And 30 in the last two. And I think that just, I mean, obviously, one, that goes to illustrate how he's sort of exploring the Bundesliga, but even more so, I haven't sort of broken this up with how much he got under Alonso, but I would easily wager that he's got well over 20, maybe even touching 25 under Alonso, because under Alonso, he's been played in a role which is absolutely tailor-made to his profile, and he's a very unique profile. Obviously, like FB Ref and stuff, everyone denotes him as a defender. That's wrong. He is not a defender. He is not a fullback. He is, I mean, he's bare. I would hesitate to call him a wingback to an extent as well. And he's obviously not like a winger either. So he's a very unique profile. I think we shouldn't sort of label him to a position. So let me just explain how or what sort of role he plays in possession. So when Bayer Leverkusen have the ball, Frimpong is high, like fully high on the right wing. He is like almost along in line with the striker, right? So it's almost like what you'd expect from a winger. He starts that high and he stays. He does not drop to help link up. In fact, it's the right center back who pushes up a bit to sort of help link up on the wing. So whereas with most wing backs, you get the wing back dropping back to sort of help build play and stuff. Frimpong does none of that. He is, like, after the build-up, he's high and he stays there. But at the same time, he's not, like, a isolated wide winger. So, for example, I'm trying to think, like, let's say Jeremy Doku, right? At Manchester City especially. What you get with him quite often is he's obviously stuck high and wide. Let's say he's on the far side. Then someone switches to him, and then he gets the ball, he dribbles at people, he does some stuff, and he creates sort of a separation. So, but they look for him in isolation against like an opposition fullback, right? So they want to put him in 1v1 situations. With Frimpong, he's a pretty good 1v1 dribbler. So he has a couple of sort of good feints. He can change direction well. He's not bad at all. Either. He can get past someone if you ask him to. But I think the best way he sort of progresses down the wing is with like very quick carrying into open space. So if you find him, you know, with a bit of open space, defender maybe a bit far away, then he can run down. And two, and this is, I think, a motif we see throughout Bayer Leverkusen's play, is he is excellent at linking up with teammates close around him and making, you know, off-ball runs, third-man runs, all that type of thing to get down the wing, sort of undetected by opponents. So obviously it's very hard to stop him when he doesn't have the ball and he's running down. So in this role, all his sort of possession traits have, I guess, been maximized as far as they can be. So he's very handy in sort of the progression phase and all. Obviously, though, he stands out, like we saw with those output sort of numbers in the final third. If you let him get down the right wing, then he's going to put in some... I mean, he's really quick, right? So he's going to get in behind your defense and he's going to put in some dangerous cutbacks, which someone just has to slot in and tap home. And he also attacks the far post really well. So again, he's not some... So if Frimpong is on the far side in the attacking third, he's not going to stay wide to sort of stretch the opposition defense. He's going to come inside and he's going to attack the far post. And he's really, really good at attacking the far post as well. So yeah, I think the closest profile that I can think of to him is Denzel Dumfries, who's again, not a winger, not a wing back, not a fullback. It's a very unique profile. But obviously, Frimpong is different to him in certain aspects. But one place where he's similar is defensively. So Dumfries is someone you do not want defending your far post. And Frimpong is also someone you do not want defending your far post. So with Leverkusen, if they defend in a back five, he's very much the fifth player, so the last one to come into that back line. And very often he'll also jump up to make it more of a 4-4-2. So he can do a job like defending 1v1 out wide, but you don't want him to be the guy to like be the one patrolling your far post when there's crosses coming in and stuff. His awareness isn't the best, and he's not the strongest in duels and stuff. So in that respect, you can't... I mean, that's the number one reason, I would say, besides his... Even, like, beyond his possession play, that's the number one reason why you cannot put him at fullback ever. So with all of that said, I think what that goes to show is that it's difficult... Oh, Alex has his hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick apology on behalf of the Get Football Tactics podcaster Jeremy Frimpong to comparing him to Denzel Dumfries defensively. I think okay. over a point nil, fair enough. Come on. Denzel Dumfries is one of the worst defenders ever seen play football. Please don't. You've got to retract a little, man. Come on, dude.
I mean, I'm not saying he's exactly that, but I'm saying he's in that sort of, somewhere in that bracket. What I'm basically saying is he's not a fullback level defender at all. So
okay,
don't put it out there. But yeah, yes. What I was gonna say is what this goes to show is that he's a very unique profile. Just on the point of defending, I think it's worth noting that he did play as a fullback at Celtic, but I think he mainly got away with like the league quality sort of stuff. So what I think, yeah. So you're, I mean, yeah, I think. If you put Dumfries in even the Scottish Premiership, he might be a bit exposed. So Frimpong isn't that bad, but he's still not going to do it in like a major league where every attacker is, you know, really threatening in the box. So with all that said, I think what this goes to show is he's a super unique profile, which, I mean, he's thrived in a system, like I said, almost with a role designed for him. And if a club is going to sign him, they need to be prepared to do that in some sense. And if it's like a really big club, it's unlikely. Because, I mean, as good as Frimpong is, he's not like a generational talent. He's not an Mbappe level player, right? So it's not like someone who you'd be like, okay, I will mess up my system just to have you in somehow. So with that being said, I think he's in a very interesting place. Now, Xabi Alonso is staying early. He said he's staying at Bayer Leverkusen for at least another season. I think Jeremy Frimpong should 100% do that. And then ideally, I think he should follow him wherever he goes. And obviously the two places where Alonso is sort of been linked with the most are Liverpool and Real Madrid. And I think it's possible for Frimpong to have a role, obviously one season later, at least, in both of those clubs. So at Liverpool, they have Mo Salah leaving, at least, you know, again, at least within a year. So they're going to need to sort of renovate their right wing. Obviously, they've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's amazing. But he's off late. He's someone who started to play inside a lot more as well, in a more central, almost playmaking role. So Frimpong can be the guy who goes high in a sort of Salah-like areas. Now, obviously, he's not going to get you the goals. He's probably more creative. And he's not, I mean, he will score those fire post goals I mentioned, but he's not going to create chances for himself like Salah does. So you need to find the goal somewhere else in your attack. But you can work something out with Frimpong on the right. And as Real Madrid, you've got Dani Carvajal not getting any younger. And again, Frimpong, and also Real Madrid are heavily stacking their attacking players on the left wing. They've already got Vinicius Jr. Rodrigo's maybe also, you're going to argue, a bit left-leaning, although he's had to play on the right a lot. And they're getting the big one, quite possibly Kylian Mbappe as well. So that's very left-heavy. They need someone on the right. Carvajal is all right, but I mean, Frimpong is clearly better than him attack-wise. So I think that that's also something I'd consider working that out somehow. So yeah, those are my sort of picks. I think basically he should just follow Alonso to the depths of hell, because he's the guy who's going to get him the best role. But Varun, I think you have something to add.
Firstly, I totally agree with your analysis on Frimpong. I think 2-3 years ago, I had done a right back report for United, and I thought Frimpong could be a right back. After seeing him, I was like, this is not a right back. And as you said, this is probably not even a right wing back.
So, do you know what's crazy though? Maybe, I mean, I think Ineos is a bridge too far, but I would have so backed the old United to sign him this summer for like 50, 60 million.
Yeah, and then totally struggle to play with him. I actually have a much simpler solution, which has already been alluded to. Frimpong should replace Dumfries at Inter. Dumfries is turning 28 next month, and Frimpong's 23. And I'm pretty sure Dumfries could fetch some value. They can con somebody off, maybe Conte's next
Manchester
job.
Manchester United.
Yeah, or wherever Conte goes next. I mean, I'm sure they can pawn off Dumfries for 30 million or something and get Frimpong for 40 or 50 and totally upgrade the right side with minimal spend. So I think that
I'm afraid I have a worse shout.
Don't say Juventus, man, please.
In lands when dreams dance on the fields of glory. Frimpong's prowess, a story untold. In their embrace, a path to ascend, where champions rise, their spirit unbend. A journey beckons where dreams pursue us. Frimpong, thrive and conquer at Juventus.
Oh my God.
This is where he will thrive.
I'm not going to argue with that just because events. Your poem was very nice. So
thank you.
For that, I'll pass
the credit on to ChatGPT. Good God. I mean, they do play. They're not the only team. Well, the only teams who play a back three who will be in the Champions League, and where they'll just say to Frimpong, "Yeah, you do you, bro." And
yeah,
I'm actually gonna reminded me. I'm gonna complete my prediction: Dumfries to Juventus, Frimpong to Inter.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I think Inter. Yeah, I think if the Alonso following to hell doesn't work, Inter is 100% the place to go. So yeah. That'll be interesting to follow. Now let's go on to our final player for the day, another defender, but a proper center back this time, so an actual defender. Alex, why don't you tell us about Leny Yoro?
Yeah, that's more difficult. It's easier said than done talking about Leny Yoro, because I think a lot of us kind of know the base facts now. He's an 18-year-old center back playing for Lille and has had a breakout season under Paulo Fonseca and has recently been linked to Real Madrid. I've watched Lille quite a lot this season. I've recently done a bit of a scouting report on them. So that's watching their games at twice speed, but also kind of like crawling back through and looking at different bits. And looking at Yoro was one of my main targets, obviously. Him and Angel Gomez, because I wanted to, you know, build my knowledge on them. Even after 690s, it's quite hard to comment on Yoro. And I think that kind of speaks to how well he passes through the game. That there's not one error I can think of that he's made. There's not one moment where I thought, oh, looked a bit shaky there or anything like that. Equally, there's not any moment where, you know, he's had to make a crazy tackle or anything. I think that's kind of reflected in his stats. I bet there's a corner of the internet that thinks Yoro's rubbish because his profile on a website with the letters FB in it is very weak, and he's only a couple of stats he does well in like pass completion. If I was to answer that, like why that is, I think it's because defensively, positionally, he just seems to be in the right place at the right time. I was reading a profile on him earlier from Seb Stafford-Bloor, where he got a couple of scouts looking at him, and described how he's quite a reactive defender rather than proactive. So rather than always looking for the ball and looking for the tackle, he reacts to the play, which I think is why you don't see him make the tackles that he does. He just tries to focus on getting in the right positions and winning the duels where they are. I think, and in that respect, physically, he just doesn't look out of his depth at all in Ligue 1. You can clearly see why Fonseca thinks he's like one of the most talented youngsters he's ever coached, because at such a young age, the more you watch football, the more you realise it's crazy for a defender that young to not be bowled over by any player that I've seen, at least. Obviously, he's a very good prospect. So let's try and focus on reasons to fear. Despite playing on paper in a 4-3-3, like through the majority of the season, I can tell you right now, Lille are chopping and changing all over the place. In these six games, they played a completely different approach in each single game. Like from back threes to back fours to like two threes to three twos, like all over the place. And on one hand, I think, yeah, that helps, you know, show Yoro like a different range of defensive systems, but I do think he's not been it's not been a simple season, right? So I wonder how that impacts him if he goes to a team with a settled system. I'd say my bigger reasons to concern are what he does on the ball, and not necessarily concern, but just this is where he can improve a lot. I think he's a bit of a nervous passer in terms of breaking the lines. What he is good at is crossfield balls on both. On both feet, he plays on the left and the right of the back two when he's their back four. He's good at switching play, which is a key part of how Lille attack. But in terms of like playing brave passes into a block to break lines, I don't think he does that particularly well yet. Seems a bit nervous. He's a good ball carrier and good at going into space, but less so if he's passing. So I think you could plug him into a team that's facing blocks every week and immediately, you know, see, it wouldn't be the best fit ever yet. But really, there isn't much to report other than that. It was quite hard to make notes on him just because he just goes through the game unnoticed. And I think for a defender, that's a really big compliment. But in terms of club going to, obviously, I said he's been linked to Real Madrid. I think there's been a lot of parallels made to Rafael Varane because... obviously, Varane moved to Real Madrid from Lens, who are Lille's big rivals, aged 18. But with Yoro, I don't think he's ready for that move at all. I don't even think he should be in the Real Madrid reserves. It's worth remembering this is his first big season in the starting 11. Like last season, he played 8.590s. And as I said, I think Fonseca's system is kind of chopping and changing. I just don't think we've seen him be properly challenged yet, and I want to see him playing week in, week out more, and facing more challenges, improving his game before he goes to a place where the spotlight is greater. So if Real Madrid do buy him, sure, that's sensible business, but I think they should be loaning him for 2 years straight back to Lille. I'd be interested to see if either of you disagree with me, but I don't think you will.
Nope, I'm absolutely with you. Like, I think, you know, like, for example, like Nico Williams, for example, who I spoke of, I think he's very much at a stage where he, like, this is a stage where he has to move now if he wants to sort of be on the trajectory for the absolute top. But with Yoro, like you say, it's just, I mean, it's effectively just one full sort of senior season. It's just 18. There's no need to sort of already jump around and make a big move, which, if it backfires, sets you back for basically the rest of your career almost. So yeah, I think staying at Lille is 100% the best way to go. At the same time, I can see Real Madrid being tempted because obviously they need center backs. And I mean, Yoro is someone who, I mean, you know what I would say though, is that I don't think he'd look like terribly out of place at Real Madrid. I think it would be an early move, but like right now they're playing what, Tchouaméni at center back and stuff. I think I think it'd be at least better than that. So if you think about it from Real Madrid's perspective, they're getting a guy who's obviously not, like, he's not absolutely elite right now, but he's decent enough. He'll do a job. And again, they're Real Madrid, so, I mean, they don't have to defend that much. And then in the future, they've got one of these prospects. And obviously, like, as like you say, and Fonseca said, he's one of the best youngsters he's ever coached because he's like 18 years old at center back, and not looking out of place at all in such a physical league. So all the big clubs in the world will be sort of trying to sign him. But what Real Madrid can offer in terms of game time is something I don't think anyone else can commit to. So from that perspective, it becomes tempting.
My concern is that... I totally
get you, but I think it just becomes tempting for both parties given the circumstances that Real Madrid are in.
Yeah, he's probably got a lot of mistakes to make for the first time. You don't want to be making them at the Santiago Bernabeu.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think
about you, Karen?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of disagree a little on the Real Madrid point. You guys are saying all the right things. I don't think he should go to a big club where he starts a lot. And I think at Real Madrid, they probably need a center back who starts a lot. Nacho shouldn't start a lot. Tchouaméni and all shouldn't be playing. Alaba has been in poor form. Rudiger is probably the only one who looks decent. They probably need a Rudiger partner starter immediately. And I don't think that's Yoro. I think Yoro should just stay. As you guys rightly said, 18, one season, lots to develop. Raw has everything, but he has to develop. And if he does move to a club, I think it should be first on a rotational role. He should be behind two clear starters. And he should keep getting those 10-20 games and then maybe replace one of the old guys within 2 years. So a club which has two starters with one being old would probably be the most ideal move, and probably a year or two later. Like, I was thinking of something like Napoli. On paper, they have center backs. They have Romani, Ostergaard, John Jesus, Nathan. They have four center backs for two slots, roughly. None of them are super great. John Jesus is 32, Romani is 30. That can probably be a system in which Yoro goes, lets them start for a while, but keeps replacing them, because you can play ahead of Romani or Jesus if you're good as well. You can make the jump early and, you know, get starts in 6 months, or you can in one and a half years with a little bit of development. So I think something like that would be a better developmental plan for him than put Real Madrid. He'll have to start in 6 months, and I don't know if that's the right thing.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think a club like Napoli is an interesting one, but I don't think you should go to Napoli themselves, because again, there's a lot of uncertainty around them with, as far as coaches are concerned. Or even like generally, like I don't think that's a step he needs to make, right? So like with Osimhen, for example, he followed the exact route, like Lille to Napoli and then now somewhere. But I think with Yoro, he's just 18. So he's already very much on the radar of all these big clubs. I don't think anyone wants to see him go to like a Napoli-like step. I think a lot will be prepared to take him. Maybe not this summer, maybe next summer, maybe 2 summers later. But I don't think he needs to make that step really. And I think at Lille, he has this regular starting spot. Very valuable to get game time to develop. So I think it's a fair place to stay, honestly. Like if the choice was Napoli or stay, then I would stay.
Yeah, I think he should stay anyway. And
yeah,
another club I thought of was Atletico Madrid. I mean, they need center backs. And Witzel plays a center back. He's 35. Savage plays. He's 33. Paulista is 33. So they have like three really old players. Jimenez is also 29. A few more years. Hermoso is 28. So the age profile of the five, and Aspilicueta also plays. He's also 34. So the age profile of the 5-6 people who are at center back, they're all 28 to 35. So Euro being added into that mix within a year, one or two of the players getting retired, him rotating with some of the peak ones, and then just being an established starter, that could probably also work.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's more interesting. Anyway, I think that rounds us off for Euro as well. And that rounds us off for the episode. So thank you very much for listening. And thank you very much, guys, for your insights and your preparation as well. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Chalit Neil. Alex is at @YeuroExpert_. Varun runs the @TheDevilsDNA account. And if you go to the @GoodFootballEU account, you will find in the bio the links to all of our country and league-specific accounts. So do follow those to be updated with all the major news and developments across the world, and especially Europe, as we approach the end of the season in the leagues and obviously the continental competitions as well. You'll find links to all of that in the notes or description of this episode, depending on where you're listening. And if your app allows it, please do rate the podcast as well if you enjoyed it. But thanks for listening. Thanks, Alex and Varun. We'll be back next week with another interesting discussion. Take care until then. Bye-bye.